Consumer Affairs and Committee. We're going to go into a work session to start with for the purpose of introducing some LC drafts. We have LC 2011, LC 2013, and LC 3107. And again, I'd like to tell the committee that the adoption of these drafts in no way indicates your support or opposition to these measures.
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt LCs 2013, 2011, and 3107 as committee bills.
Representative Schaffler moves that we adopt LC 2011, LC 2013, and LC 3107 as committee bills. Is there any objection? Seeing none, they are adopted. And I'll close the work session and open a public hearing on House Bill 2445. Janet, can you give us a brief rundown on the bill, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2445, at the request of Representative Butler and Representative Schaffler, requires a local government, prior to providing a telecommunication service, to obtain voter approval of the method of financing the service and any capital construction associated with the service. It requires the local government to prepare a three-year projection of direct and indirect costs, anticipated revenues, and a cost-benefit analysis. It also requires at least one public hearing prior to provision of the service. The bill exempts libraries, services provided to a public body, and services provided as part of a telecommunications network for either police, fire, or public safety. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet. First, I'd like to call Brant Wolf, David Paulson, and Doug Cooley, please. Thank you, gentlemen. Go ahead, Brent. Let's start with you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brant Wolf. I represent the Oregon Telecommunications Association. The OTA is a statewide trade association that represents telephone companies providing telecommunication services throughout urban and rural Oregon. The OTA was the requester for House Bill 2445, and what I'd like to do today, I'd like to organize my testimony the following way. I would like to indicate what we feel the bill does, what the bill doesn't do, and then why we ask the bill to be introduced. House Bill 2445 is actually kind of the culmination of a couple of other bills that were issued or requested during the last few sessions. What we tried to do was rake out some of the issues of concern in past bills, and those issues were preemption of local governments, and then libraries providing service and services provided between government entities, and emergency communications. We exempted all those services from our bill. What the bill does, basically, we kept it very simple. It asks a local government to do the following things if they want to begin to provide a project to provide retail telecommunication services only, not wholesale telecommunication services. It would ask for a public meeting, as Janet indicated, some financial statements, some pro forma financial projections, a cost-benefit analysis, and then finally a vote of the people on whatever financing mechanism would be used to finance the project. That's all the bill does. That's all it's supposed to do. It's supposed to introduce some transparency and sunshine into the process. What the bill doesn't do is prohibit any local government from doing anything. It doesn't preempt the local government from beginning to provide telecommunication services. It doesn't ask the local government to ask the telecom company for permission to do this. It asks the local government to ask the people for permission to do this. If public funds are going to be used as a form of venture capital, we feel that's entirely appropriate. the reasons that we asked for the bill to be introduced are pretty simple. In our opinion, if there's some transparency and sunshine introduced into the process that allows the local telephone company, which in many cases is providing the service that's going to be provided by the government-owned network, the opportunity to see how the system is going to be financed and what the system is all about. This would allow the local phone company or telecommunications company to think about their own plans for the local community and the system they're going to deploy and how much capital they might invest in that local network that they already operate. And that's basically all this bill does. It's one page long. There's nothing hidden in this bill at all. I am aware that the opponents of this bill view this as some kind of a prohibition attempt or an attempt to set up roadblocks or to stop local government from entering into retail telecommunication services. I'm telling you today, I'm testifying today, that that is not the case. That is false. And any assertion to the contrary is absolutely false. This bill has been seen as anti-rural. I'm here to tell you today that I represent rural companies and rural towns that provide high-speed internet access in areas of this state that are so far removed from the high-density population areas that they probably shouldn't be doing it, but they're doing it. So any assertion that I'm anti-rural or this bill is anti-rural is just false. That's not the case. That's not what it's intended to do, and I don't think that's what it does. In a nutshell, that's what this bill is. That's why we asked for it. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Why don't we take the testimony of everyone here, at the, and then we'll open up to questions.
Certainly.
I'm afraid to move the mic. It says, please do not move the microphones. So hopefully you can hear me okay. For the record, Chair Brown, members of the committee, my name is David Paulson. I serve as Government Affairs Manager for Sprint. Sprint serves over 70,000 access lines in rural Oregon and has been doing so for quite some time. I think Brand stated it very well. The bill does not place any prohibitions on cities entering retail telecommunications. What it does do is give taxpayers a look at that decision because that's a risky venture in many cases. And if the city is going to enter into activity that one could view as outside the normal purview of government activity and possibly tie up a large amount of capital and have citizen taxpayers have to back that venture, we feel that it's appropriate that the citizens have a voice in that, and there's some reasons for that. But I want to make sure also that we clarify that this is something that is within the purview of the state of Oregon. The Supreme Court has ruled, I think, last year, and I've recited that in my written testimony, that it is within the rights of the states to decide whether municipalities and government can enter the telecom business. That is the decision that the state of Oregon can make, and we think it's an important decision for lawmakers to consider. Again, this bill does not prohibit that entry. This bill strictly opens it up, and Brent says, adds a little sunshine to the process. As citizens know where tax dollars may be going, especially when there are a lot of other needs in the communities that may need to be addressed as well. So it provides a balance and a check to say, yes, we want to invest in health medications, and we don't want to put it over here with some other activity. There are some consequences to doing this for cities, and there's consequences for private industry as well. But there's potential for a number of things to happen, and we want just to make sure citizens can balance that interest. Competition with industry for retail telecommunications could have the potential to lead to discouragement of future investment. If a telecom service is being subsidized by taxpayers and offered at costs that are less than private industry can provide, why would private industry come into that community and invest additional funds when they couldn't compete with the rates that government's charging? That could be a problem. I don't know that would always happen, but it's a potential to happen. It's pretty hard to compete with subsidized services, especially services that are subsidized with tax dollars and grants. We as private industry can't get those. We don't get grant money. I wish I could, but I don't. One of the important points, I think, in the bill is the three-year projection of costs and revenues. And that's important because while it's easy to identify a lot of the direct costs of putting in fiber and operating the fiber, there are a lot of indirect costs that sometimes can be overlooked, and that can be a problem. For example, you have to have ongoing maintenance. And those costs, when facilities are new, are lower, but as facilities age, maintenance costs rise. It takes an infrastructure to operate on an ongoing basis, what we would call a network operations center. Somebody has to be able to continue to operate the network, take care of trouble complaints, and those kinds of things. There are costs to bill customers. There are costs to put contracts together for customers. Those are all costs that may not be readily apparent in the first pass of trying to go in this kind of a business. And then there's the depreciation cost. Technology does tend to evolve. And fiber optics is good in the latest technology, but things change. And so somehow there will have to be, if the government's going to be in this business, funds available to have technology changes to be able to upgrade that technology. And those are costs that aren't always apparent when you first go into business. You have to think about those. So this three-year projection would help in that process to think through the issues fully, what may be involved. Because telecommunications may not be the primary role of government, as is street maintenance and other things, this is why we think it's important that citizens have a voice in where the tax dollars are being spent and what they're being asked to back up, if the revenue bonds are being asked to back up those bonds. No question that in normal government services, citizens elect people to be able to make those decisions for them. But if government's going to compete with private industry, it's going to take funds away from other government services. It has the potential to do that. The risk is there. And I think we just feel in this bill, citizens need a right to make that decision. It's not saying they're not going to make it. It's not saying they're going to make they're not going to say no every time, because it may be very important to deploy telecommunication services in some areas. And that may be a role, but it gives them a chance to balance those competing interests and to know what they're being asked to back up. Sprint welcomes competition. We welcome fair and healthy competition. But generally, when municipalities and government entities compete with private industry for retail-type services, the competition isn't always level. And it makes it hard for private sector companies to compete. I talked about that earlier. We don't have the subsidies available. We have different tax burdens than the municipalities would have. We can't get the loans and the bonds at some of the low rates that cities and counties can get. We don't have access to right-of-ways at no cost. Those are things that cities and other municipalities and government agencies may have. So all we're saying is, if we're going to compete, let's compete fair and equitably, and let's let citizens know that if we're going to subsidize and going to back up an issue in an entity and a service that may be below cost, that they make a conscious decision to do that. That's all we're asking. We think that's reasonable. We think they have the right to make that decision, and we think the House Bill 2445 provides for that right.
Thank you, David. Doug, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and excuse me, members of the committee. My name is Doug Cooley. I represent CenturyTel. And in the interest of time, I would like to let you know that CenturyTel does support House Bill 2445. And to give you a little bit of background, CenturyTel does provide telecommunication services to 56 exchanges or service areas around the state of Oregon, primarily in rural areas. We do have some experience with these kind of things and these kind of issues. And I thought it was important to go on the record to let you know CenturyTel does support this. CenturyTel provides not only your dial tone, but also your DSL is a popular high-speed internet service that we provide. We do have some history of operating in rural areas in partnerships with counties, in places where it could be seen as competition with local government, and various scenarios that you can possibly dream up. I think CenturyTel has been involved or has been contacted by some of those scenarios. As Mr. Polson mentioned, it does take an ongoing investment. CenturyTel has been providing DSL for over 2 years in most of these areas, has plans in the coming months to expand that. In the coming 18 months, would like to see it available in all of its service areas as investment and as time and technology and demand deems it appropriate. So I think it's important for these kind of details to be known. As some of my predecessors have mentioned, it's an investment scenario that private enterprise needs to know about.
We've been in a situation where we make business decisions on capital deployment for making these services available, and we know that sometimes subscribership can be very low, and it's a risky proposition business-wise, but we do gather demand and information for rural customers, and we try to make the best economic decision possible. I think it's reasonable through the propositions to have the taxpayers get a glimpse at the same kind of process and business decisions that any other entity would make in these types of scenarios of putting services out there and hoping people subscribe to them. I will let you know that we do employ, for example, we talked about ongoing operations. We do employ, again, for example, four technicians in the Lakeview area, one in Silver Lake, and there's four of them in five in Merrill. Places that they can roll trucks from, people on the ground, people that do billing support, maintenance, all those kind of things. And so we do have some experience with this, and we do support these principles, and I make myself available for any questions that you might have.
Thank you, gentlemen. Representative Schaffer.
Thank you. I'm responsible for this nice meeting today. When I was a kid growing up, nobody ever told me that American democracy was going to be easy. My question, and I, this is for the other folks, too, that will be testifying, is just to get on this on the record, there's nothing in this bill that would have any impact on any current public utility or municipality that is currently offering telecom services today. It's strictly prospective, not retrospective. And that question goes out to everybody here today, too.
Mr. Chair, Representative Shoffler, that's absolutely correct. That's not, those systems that are currently in place are not contemplated by this bill. That was never the intent, and any plain reading of this bill should indicate that.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Esquivel.
Yes. Do you have any idea, Mr. Wolf, what it costs to have people vote on this issue? Whereas, on the other hand, they have, on revenue bonds was mentioned, that is in the purview of the city councils of the local municipalities. But where's this $85,000, and I'm relating only to Medford, where's this $85,000 going to come from for them to vote on?
Mr. Chair, Representative Esquivel, that figure, I assume somebody's told you that's how much it's going to cost to hold an election.
I know what it costs to do an election. It's about $1.20 per person in the city of Medford, and there's 71,000.
Sure. I guess my response to that would be, I'm not sure where the general fund, I would assume, and I would only indicate that the cost of an election is probably minuscule in comparison to the cost of a telecommunications network.
Any other questions?
Follow-up. Would this be construed then as an unfunded mandate?
Mr. Chair, Representative Esquivel, I hadn't really thought about that. I guess it would be. You can say that, but it would still be a decision of the city council to go forward or not. This bill doesn't indicate that you have to go provide a system and get an election to do that. The city council or the county commission or whatever body's involved would make that decision to go ahead with the network, and part of the price of doing business would be this election. I don't think I would view it as an unfunded mandate. This bill doesn't mandate to build out a system. But it's still a local decision.
But there is a trigger in this bill that, in my opinion, as a former local councillor, is an unfunded mandate, because there is a trigger mechanism in this bill that tells me that if we want to do this locally under city council, which I might add, most city councils do a report card every 2 to 4 years because they get voted on. But more importantly, to me, there's a trigger mechanism in this bill that requires you to have an election. I'd like to know where that $1.20 per person is coming from. And you say the general fund. Well, you know how it works in this building. Everyone talks about the general fund like it's a bottomless pit with money, but it's not true. So I'm curious.
Chair Brown, Representative Esquivel, sure there are costs to an election, no question about it. To answer your question where it's coming from, I assume it comes from the citizens of the tax revenues that are collected in your particular location. But I think Mr. Wolf was right on the target. The cost of an election, the cost of doing business for the people, is probably going to be a lot less than the cost of making perhaps a mistake or a huge investment in a telecom infrastructure and operating costs ongoing that the people have no say in, but are still going to have to back up. So, yes, there are costs. Where's the money coming from? I think we know it's going to come out of the city treasury. It's going to come from tax revenues. But there are a lot more revenues that could flow out should this venture, if a city or county or whatever wants to go into business, isn't successful. That would be a small amount probably compared to what they're asked to back up down the road. So,
and if I may, Mr. Chair, Representative Esquivel, we can look at the city of Ashland as an example. And maybe someone in the room here behind me can talk about this a little more knowledgeably, but it's my understanding that that system that's in place has never earned any positive revenue. And in fact, it's cost quite a bit of money from the general fund to maintain that and keep it up and running for however many years it's been running. So I think it's a balancing act, the cost of an election versus untold costs for a system that's not ever going to make the revenue it's supposed to make.
Does the private company that installs these telecommunication systems, do you pay property tax on that? Is there a property tax assessed on?
Chair Brown, we do pay property taxes on the property we have in the state.
Do the do you pay franchise fees to cities also for having those there?
We pay franchise fees, yes, in many cities.
Do those funds flow into their general fund then?
Chair Brown, that I can't answer. I'm not sure where they book or where they place the franchise fees and what they're used for. But we do pay franchise fees.
Okay. It's revenue that flows from us to the city, for sure.
Thank you, gentlemen. Any other questions? Don't see any. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your
testimony.
Time.
Let's see. Representative Barnhart didn't want to. Huh? So. Okay, could I have Mayor Van Cleve from the Dalles and Don Erickson and Susan Huntington, please? Could I get a fourth one off the chair?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll go three. I was trying to figure out how I can get four people up there. Go ahead. We'll start with you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman Brown and honorable members of the committee. My name is Rob Van Cleve, and I am the mayor of the city of the Dalles, and I am here today to represent the city of the Dalles. We are here before you today to oppose House Bill 2445. Approximately 1 year ago, the city of the Dalles, in partnership with Wasco County, built a 17.5-mile redundant fiber optic loop, costing approximately $2 million. And we are currently adding a 4-mile subloop extension out to our port property. We call our fiber optic system QLife, quality of life. All of the schools in our K-12 system are connected to QLife, as well as our local community college. All of our major medical facilities, hospital, clinics, doctor's offices, and labs are connected to QLife, and of course the city of the Dalles and Wasco County. We built this system at a time when we had the highest unemployment in the United States. We built this system with a local public-private partnership and some financial help from Senator Ron Wyden in the United States Congress. We understand the issues facing the state of Oregon. And we understand that there are many critical issues before you this session. House Bill 2445 is not one of them. We are proud of the fact that as a community, we are self-sufficient and never give up. In our community, we never ask for a handout. Occasionally, we ask for a hand up. And we always strive to solve our own problems. House Bill 2445 would create barriers, not solutions. Bills like House Bill 2445 could potentially interfere or prohibit locally elected officials from being able to provide the infrastructure to retain and attract jobs for our constituents. Now, it was just mentioned that fiber is not a primary focus of local government. Well, in the Dalles, we treat it just like we do roads, water system, sewer system, in this new age we're in. It would interfere with our ability to serve our constituents, the constituents who live in our communities, our constituents that are not the corporate executives or corporate boards in places like Kansas City. Would my constituents have a voice in the boardroom in Kansas City, or do they have a voice in the city council of the city of the Dalles? In each of Oregon's cities and counties, the processes already exist to make sure that we make sound decisions. We have locally elected officials who are subject to open meetings, public record laws. We have budget committees with citizen representation, and our constituents can always refer items to the ballot. And ultimately, as was mentioned earlier, we have the election process every 2 to 4 years to validate or invalidate the wisdom of our decisions. In closing my remarks, I would just ask, what is the need or what is the motivation of House Bill 2445? Thank you.
After I moved it, he said, don't move it. My name is Susan Huntington. I'm the executive director of the Dalles Area Chamber of Commerce. And it pains me terrifically to be sitting here between these two. Because it is...
A rose between two thorns.
There you go. Well, you're about to find out how not true that is. At any rate, I generally find myself speaking out on behalf of private enterprise, because that's what chambers of commerce are all about. But today, I have to come and tell you that the interests of my community trumps the interests of private enterprise. And I have this opportunity, in the words of a prior speaker, to shine a little sunshine on our actual situation of working through this Q Life project in the city of the Dalles. I'd like to, for the record, tell you that Sprint is our local service provider. Initially, when we decided that one of the ways that we could grow our community out of the poor economy that we were in, we did ask Sprint if they would install fiber optic services in the Dalles. And they did tell the community that wasn't in their business plan, and that, you know, they couldn't afford to do it. We didn't have the business for it. And we understood. We then asked them if they would consider to be a partner in a private-public partnership, but they declined, and we really didn't understand. Next, we asked them if they'd like to operate the QLife project. Again, they declined. We think we understood. They started to actively oppose the QLife project at local, state, and federal levels. Senator Wyden stepped in and tried to intercede on the behalf of our community. And now it appeared that we were going to truly start to understand. They influenced the Port of the Dalles to withdraw from the QLife project, offering to install free fiber, which they did, but we couldn't understand why. They wouldn't sell Google dark fiber. But fortunately, Google cited QLife as the main reason they had chosen the Dalles for their new operation. The port may now have to repay Sprint for its gift because of Google. I wish that we didn't understand. Local nonprofits are turned away for donations from this company now and sent to the city of the Dalles, stating that they are now the competition. We understand that this is not the way that we want anyone doing business in our community. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
It's always difficult to follow two eloquent speakers, so Chair Brown and committee members, you have my written testimony. I would like to cite a couple things in there, and then I'll just make some comments.
Could I get your name for the record?
So got the first line of
the tape knows what you're
doing. Absolutely. I'm Dan Erickson, Wasco County Judge and President of Quality Life Intergovernmental Agency, which we commonly call QLife, the fiber optic loop.
Thank you.
Our county mission statement includes a quote from Abraham Lincoln, and I'm going to read that. The legitimate objective of government is to do for a community of people whatever they need to have done, but cannot do it all, or cannot do so well for themselves in their separate and individual capacities. That is what Q Life was all about. As you heard, our local provider could not feasibly, financially justify the construction of a loop. But rural Oregon needs telecommunications. We need the ability to compete with urban America. We don't need impediments. There are enough impediments to building a broadband system. Public officials have to go through public systems processes to take on a project. You don't always take on a project that is successful. And I think we learn from mistakes. And I would say that Ashland was probably a mistake. Q Life learned a lot from Ashland. I don't think we're going to probably repeat an Ashland. In Oregon, we've come a long ways. The savings to Wasco County alone from hooking up to our QLife system, and this would be a reason why our local provider would be upset with us, the county government saves $40,000 a year in telephone bills. Wasco County is an eastern county, and people from large counties don't get a perspective of what $40,000 a year really is. That is almost 1% of the property tax that we collect that goes to our general fund. That is significant in Wasco County. Our hospital is connected to the Q Life network. Because of that, I had to take my father-in-law to the hospital at 2:30 in the morning, and they did not have an x-ray technician to read his chest x-rays. It was sent to Sacramento, California, read by an x-ray technician, and sent back. The prior telecommunication system could not provide an accurate enough picture to be able to do that. Because of that, we got an instant reading and got information back. Our public health system could not connect, which they're mandated to do, to the state system in Salem, because through the provision of services, they had to go through too many connections, too many lines to get to Salem under the old system, and their system was down most of the time. Q Life provides a service to rural Oregon, and it is important to us. It saves us money. And it could not be provided by the private sector. I would like to address one other issue that has been mentioned. This will not affect current providers. We are a current provider. However, we have to build out our system to the Google site. I would contend, the way this bill is written, that we would have to vote to expend those funds to provide additional service. This concerns capital construction, $200,000 to $250,000 to provide the extra loop. I don't see anywhere in that bill that we would be excluded from having to go through a public process to extend that service. I started my written comments with don't be bamboozled by H.R. 2445, and I ended up with, it's better to be Googled than bamboozled. Google is huge for Wasco County. I think Google is big for Oregon. I think Google would be a gem for Washington County, Multnomah County, Clackamas County. You can't imagine what it is to Wasco County. Thank you.
You know, I'm one of these people that's very technologically challenged, and so I've been Googled, that's for sure. I'm Googling and talking about things. But you said it cost $250,000 to build out this system. Where do you get the money?
the current extension, we had two choices to go to. We could have gone to the Oregon Investment Board, which we've gone to in the past. We chose to go to the Mount Hood Economic Alliance, and that is the Oregon Economic Development monies. $50,000 in grant, $200,000 in loan, and that will be paid back through the service fees that we will collect.
And does this provide dial tune to private individuals also?
It can, but that is being provided right now. I don't think we've actually signed the provider, but we have another CLAC formed in the Dalles that is using both the Sprint CO and Q-Life to provide service, and that is a voice over IP. It's a dial-up service. I'm not sure about the voice over IP.
So it is in your business plan then to provide dial service somewhere along?
Not in our business plan. We do have, as a direct customer, Columbia River Bank, and they are expanding their service as one of our original partners in the system. And we will make provision for exceptional circumstances like Google coming in that could not get service from a local provider, so they're getting direct dark fiber service from Q-Life.
Any questions? Representative Schaffler.
Yeah, a couple things and then a question. First of all, this is a learning process for all of us.
It has been a tremendous learning process for me. I'm technologically challenged, too. I didn't get to be president of Q-Life because of my technical background.
I'm good with a shovel, but I was a city councilor, too. I understand the challenges facing local government very, very well. And I want to may say one more thing. Just for the record, I want to be very clear here. You're not going to find two people in this building more supportive of rural Oregon than Mike Schaffler and Tom Butler. I want to make that very clear. And I don't want anyone walking out of here thinking anything different. And I can back it up. My question to you is the same thing I asked the telecom folks. Your telecom folks, too. You alluded to it. Will this in any way have an impact on your current system, and are you absolutely sure that you're expanding out there to serve Google, which I hope you do. I want that. I want all those jobs and all the revenue for your community in the state and those working people. Are you positive that you will have to go through this process if this passed or not?
No, I'm not positive, but I can't read in that bill where expending capital funds would not require an approval by a public vote. And I would like to comment that I'm here not only for Q-Life, but for the parts of rural Oregon that are not connected yet, that it doesn't make financial sense for a private provider to supply service to. I want them to have the same opportunity that we have had. However, Google would not be coming to the Dalles if that bill was in place, if we had to go through that process. And the reason being is the mayor and I are under a non-disclosure agreement. We could not have revealed the critical information to take to the people to get a vote on this because of company security issues. So we would have had a chicken and egg situation. We couldn't have built it until we had a commitment from them, and we couldn't have gotten the commitment without it having been built. This is one of those things that we foresaw a need, and they came to the door. Interesting enough, when we built it, we thought we would really be lucky to get this built and land a call center. That was the pie in the sky we were shooting for.
You'd been competing with India.
Yeah, that's right. And that competition started to probably reveal itself as we were building. But we would have never guessed that it would be a Google. However, we did see that this was the future of America and the future of economic growth, you needed to be connected to the rest of the world. I would, if I may, I'd like to quote a news article and email internet article that commented on the Dalles. It's called Link News. Number one article. He picks 10 articles, nationwide or international. Commentary: the Dalles has been Googled. To highlight it, Google's advanced team has made several comments about why they picked the Dalles that are worth taking to heart. Number one, the community had the foresight to build their own redundant ring fiber optics and can quickly extend this to any port property. That was their number one reason that the team cited out of the four.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is for Mr. Van Cleve. You've been involved in public service and politics for a while. My question is about the outcome of this bill. Should it go forward? Let's say you did refer a measure to the voters. How do you think that the money that you would be able to raise might stack up to the money that phone companies' shareholders might put in?
Well, if I understand your question, sir, I did. Mr. Chair, Representative Shield, easily companies like Sprint have greater financial abilities than we do. It took 11 funding sources for us to get an underpass built in a number of years to do it. So Sprint or any of the large telecoms can raise funds much easier than we can. If we take funds, if we had to spend $85,000 for an election, we'd have to make decisions on what wouldn't we do, or what position wouldn't be funded, or would we buy less one police vehicle. So those kind of decisions, that would be less than $85,000 in our community, but relatively speaking, it would be the same. And I guess where we're coming from, because we have ours, you know, we come here today with the frosting on the cake called Google, but we think it's important that every other city and county in Oregon have the same opportunity. We believe that the safeguards are already in place. I stand in line at the grocery store with my constituents. I sit at football games with my constituents. My constituents have a voice. And every 2 years, in my case, they get to tell me if I made a wise decision. And I'm not sure that a corporate board anywhere outside of the state of Oregon has that kind of input that often, especially if they're a monopoly in Oregon. So I hope I answered your question, sir.
Almost. Can I quick
follow up?
Thank you. So just to be clear, you couldn't put any government sources into a campaign. You couldn't do direct mail from government resources. You couldn't do television. You couldn't do radio.
No.
Thank you.
Oh, I see. No, absolutely not. Couldn't take a position. Informative only. Informative only.
Does the cost of building one of these systems have any negative impacts on other parts of your budget? Does it take away from any of the other, the cost, you know, that does it take dollars away from fire or police or streets?
No, sir. Initially, to get it going, we spent a lot of time doing the studies, and we had a lot of help from the Northern Wasco County PUD, who funded the initial feasibility study. In the very beginning, we had help from the partners and staff time involved. 1 year without Google, 12 months after the system was up and running, we're already profitable. I can defer to Judge Erickson about the ongoing expenses.
And we just had our first annual report since we've been up and running, and we have not been up and running for a full year. We came on, started service mid-year. We are $40,000 in the black to put into our contingency reserve. We have a list of contingency items. Among those are extending the system on out to the smaller communities, Dufour, Maupin, and around the rest of the county to provide the same opportunities. So we recognize the need to continue the effort, and we are in the black from basically day one.
I have Representative Dallum here, and he's needed in another committee. And if one of you would step down for a minute, I'd.
Very well. The rose.
We have a new rose.
Yeah, the rose.
You've got another thorn.
Another thorn.
Of all the people from Wasco County, I'm, for the record, Representative John Dollum, House District 59. Chairman Brown, thank you for the privilege of being able to get in and say my piece and get out. I do have upstairs in our own committee community college bills to consider, and I think this might be one more important than that. I would like to say that I think Wasco County's testimony has been eloquent. Wasco County has been well represented by their mayor, the chamber, and Judge Erickson. But right now, we have in House District 59 fully 8 counties. And we're trying to put together a telecommunications package in Wheeler County, which represents a whole different scenario. And here at the legislative level, our attempt is to provide safety in Wheeler County through cell phone service. And I am absolutely committed to the fact that the Wheeler County commissioners know what might work best. And in Wheeler County, if we add this election to the process, we will only complicate the issue. I might also say that in Wheeler County, there is no market for cell phones. If everybody in Wheeler County bought a cell phone, you couldn't pay for a tower in 100 years. So I'm going to let you know that not only has Wasco County set the pace, but another county that I represent would like the opportunity to provide a safety system on their highways, byways, and the far-flung enterprises that that county presents. This legislation would make that process more difficult. I have faith in them. I know each of the county commissioners. I know the Wasco County commissioners. I know the Wasco City Council. And I know that those government agencies would not take us where we do not want to go. And with that, I plead that you do not pass this bill out of committee.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions? Don't say any. Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming all this distance to testify.
Thank you.
We really appreciate
Thank you, members of the committee.
Yeah, Representative Earnhardt. Thank you, Representative, for being patient with us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Phil Barnhart. I represent House District 11 in the Oregon House of Representatives. I have a prepared set of remarks to make about a slightly different issue than the ones that you've heard so far. But after the very eloquent comments made by the immediately prior witnesses, I wanted to deal with the question raised by Representative Shields in a slightly different way. In May of 2000, Eugene Water and Electric Board had on the ballot in the primary a proposal to the people to ask them to allow the Eugene Water and Electric Board to spend some money to do a study to determine whether or not it wanted to go into the telecom business in Eugene, and it was going to cost some dollars to do that. During that election process, a number of very large newspaper ads appeared, and I think some other advertising as well, opposing that measure. And nobody knew where the money was coming from to finance those ads. Because of the campaign finance reporting rules at the time, the results, the source of that funds wasn't going to become available until after the election. One of the city councilors who was very concerned about this issue asked the treasurer for the group that was opposing the measure to open the books so that they could see who the contributors were to the campaign. I think you probably know the answer that I'm going to give you. The fact is that it was very difficult to get those books open, but they finally were opened. And when they were opened, it was learned that the large dollar contributors to the campaign were two telecom companies that had an interest in maintaining essentially a monopoly position in their capacity to install telecom in the Eugene area. If you looked at the voting results as they came in on election night, it was obvious that the measure was failing before the Eugene Register Guard published the story about the source of these funds. The measure did pass. The study was done. Eugene Water Electric Board can probably tell you in more detail than I can what they've done since then. They have not built a system at this at this point, but they're continuing, of course, constantly to study the issue. The point that I wanted to talk about today was a little different than the one you've heard about, although I think the one you've heard about is ample reason to reject this bill. The fact is, the reality is that that counties and cities need to be entrepreneurial when they're trying to build their local economies. There are times when the interests of London and New York stockholders do not match the interests of Oregon communities, and we need to do things that do not pencil out for a large telecom company. And this is not to criticize those companies at all. It's simply a reality of the economic world in which they live as compared to our need to build economic infrastructure in Oregon to maintain the standard of living for Oregonians, to have good paying jobs, and to, of course, fund our own budget, because we're able to raise the general fund in order to do that. I want to talk about something slightly different today as well. One of the things that is developing in the power consumption area is the whole issue of demand response programs. Now, I'm talking about the municipal power companies like Eugene Water and Electric Board that currently are in the business of providing electricity to residents of Eugene and other nearby users, including residential users and business users and industrial users. In dealing with electric power, I'm sure you're aware that that base rate power is much less expensive than peak power costs. As the utilization of power over minutes or hours increases, more and more production of electricity has to be brought online at higher and higher costs. And as the peak of electric utilization goes up, then you end up with situations where you end up building very expensive power plants, like the gas-fired plants that are being considered in parts of the state, that are available simply to turn on a few hours a year or a few hours a month to provide peak power. Very expensive kinds of ways of doing this. If you have demand response programs in place, you can cut off the top end of that peak power. And the best way to do demand response programs is to have clear and automatic communication systems between users and the machines that are utilizing this power and the power company that has to provide it. More and more, Eugene Water and Electric Board and others are implementing load curtailment programs to help lower the impact of skyrocketing wholesale power increases. It would be extremely useful for them to be able to utilize telecommunications systems which were connected directly to users and maybe to some extent, sometimes even to the machines themselves, and through agreements with users, cut down on the peak power utilization. We're talking about gigantic savings in electrical costs. Now, as I read this bill would require an election to be held before Eugene Water Electric Board or other municipal utilities could implement a plan like that, even though the plan itself is utilizing telecommunications as an incidental mechanism in dealing with its primary business, which is the production and delivery of electricity. That's my testimony today, except to add to my voice to those who you've just heard that I oppose this bill. I've opposed similar bills that place unrealistic and unreasonable restrictions on the activities of local governments and local municipal utilities, who, after all, are looking out for their local citizens, the needs of the local community, and the local economy, rather than the needs of New York and London stockholders. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions? Don't see any. Thank you very much. Could I have Terry Edvelson? Is that how I'm pronouncing it right?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
He wasn't sure he would be able to stay, and he did leave his testimony, and we put it at your place first thing this morning. It was under your agenda. So Mr. Edvelson's from the Rural Oregon Telecommunications Consortium in the Grand, and I believe it's testimony in opposition to the bill. In opposition to the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Janet. Okay, let's see. John McCardle, is that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. And then Rob Myers, please.
And if I can have Elaine Stewart join us. She's
certainly, yeah.
Elaine, would you care to?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is John McCardle. I'm the mayor of Independence, approximately 15 miles away from here. Come and visit us. I'm here today to speak briefly and to expound a little bit upon, to build on what's previously been already presented. In the early 1990s, well, in the later 1990s, the cities of Independence and Monmouth, we are a city of 7,000. Monmouth is a city of 8,000, and we're sister communities. We're on the wrong side of the E-divide. While we only are 15 minutes from this building, we are classic rural Oregon, complete with old-time downtowns, and we're out there, and we're far enough away we are classified as rural, and the telecommunication industry finds us to be rural. We wanted to, as a community with challenging unemployment, with our mill closing, with all the classic challenges that small communities have, we wanted to do something to improve our economic lot. And so collectively, we took a look, and as both communities took a look and said, we really need to bring high-speed fiber broadband to our community for an economic engine. Well, we talked to the providers in the late 90s, and they said, yeah, we'd be happy to bring that stuff to you in 2014. And we said, come on, give us a break. Well, give us something for real. And they said 2013. And we determined that was not what was good for our community. So the cities of Monmouth and Independence came together, and we have a high-speed fiber network that is in place providing industry and our government resources and tools that are very helpful. And I want to tell you, it really makes a difference in our community as we try to recruit business and industry. We're a little engine that could. As been previously mentioned, when you're a local government, you do everything in public. As you folks know, everything is done in public. And if you were at my city council meeting yesterday, you'd hear everything in public because people come up and ask you questions and let you know what they think. We have our budget process in public. Everything that we do is in public, and even our local reporter has taken the time to come and cover this news story today right here, and they, let me tell you, they cover everything that happens in City Hall, and I mean everything. And so everything that we do has public hearings. Our local media covers it. We have local accountability. As was previously mentioned, I too get ambushed in the grocery store. I happen to get hit up in the produce department, but with the high school basketball game, people come and talk to you at all times. Our goal in our high-speed fiber optic network is to provide service to our citizens, our folks, the people we care about, the people that elect me, the people that make our city a wonderful place. And I think it's kind of interesting that I'm a volunteer. Elaine Stewart, our president of our Chamber of Commerce, sitting next to me, she's a volunteer, and she's not at her store making money, although if you'd like to buy flowers, I'm sure she'll sell you some. But, you know, we're here because we're caring about the community, about what's best for our citizens. And it's frustrating that for the telecommunication industry doesn't want to provide service to us, and so they talk about having open government. They talk about transparency. We are so transparent. It is unbelievable. You can't do anything in a small town without people knowing about it. I think it's a little bit disingenuous. And I also think this whole discussion is very parallel to the electrification of the 30s. The Rural Electrification Act of 1938 came into place to provide rural Oregon with electricity. The same arguments were put forth back in the 30s about from there, the industry at that time. So I guess what I want to tell you folks is that we are operating like a business. We do pay franchise fees. We do provide services to our public. And frankly, this is an unneeded kind of legislation. It's not necessary. As the previous speaker spoke, we all know in ballot elections, truth is one of the first casualties. We're all elected officials. We know how that goes. And who has more money? big telecoms or a few local citizens trying to help make things happen. Folks, I urge you to please kill this bill and let us get on with providing services to our community. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. Elaine, please.
Chair Brown and committee, good morning. This kind of brings back memories. About 2 years ago, I testified before a committee on the same bill, 2445. And you know what? Nothing has changed. We have a community that is excited.
For the record, could I get your name, please?
I'm sorry, Elaine Stewart, President of the Chamber of Commerce for Monmouth and Independence.
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay. We have a community that is very excited and eagerly awaiting the service of high-speed Internet that we will have available for them. And my only thought is, who knows better the needs and wants of a community than those who live in it, those who work in it, and those who have businesses in it? Who has a better right to decide how to promote and attain those needs than the community itself? And for the economic growth and prosperity of our community, we really need to control our own destiny. So I'm going to make it short and sweet. I'm just going to say that, again, once again, I would like to ask this committee to think very, very seriously about this bill, because I think your decision will have a profound effect on all the communities in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you, Emily. Terry?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rob Myers. I live in Condon, and also for the record, I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council, and I'd like to take this opportunity to personally and professionally attest to Representative Schottler's sincere and abiding commitment to the interests and welfare of rural communities. That's concurrent with properly addressing the interests of his constituents. That's true of Representative Butler as well. So I think it's important. I represent exclusively rural and country of rural interest in legislature divisions for almost 10 years. And I'm here to tell you that he's a good deal. I want to give you a brief background. The Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council was established statutorily in 2001, Senate Bill 765. It was a group of regional consortia, Eastern Oregon Telecommunications Consortium in Southern Oregon. There were about 11 original members, and it has grown somewhat since then. It's important to note that the ORTCC is the only statutorily established unfunded council in the state of Oregon. And I say that only because I want to put this in the proper perspective with regard to my testimony, and that is that the ORTCC, or even its members, have any underlying or financial interest in the outcome of this legislation, whether or not this legislation passes. We believe that 2445 in its present form is fatally flawed because it doesn't contemplate or acknowledge the fact that public-private partnerships, particularly in rural areas, are central to the survival of many communities. I also want to comment that it was mentioned earlier that perhaps government had a right to engage in the road maintenance and road building and so on and so forth. Well, statutorily established as well that telecommunications is in fact essential infrastructure, exactly like roads and sewage. I think that's important. It's also been said that 2445 does not prohibit local government from entering the engagement of retail telecommunication services, and that's true. That was also true of 2442 and 2443 in 2003 and 2680 in 2001. But there is little functional difference between prohibiting someone from doing something and making a prohibitively complex process prerequisite to doing it. The result is the same. 2445 in its present form would hinder rather than facilitate the creation of synergies in small rural communities that currently exist. And you've heard examples of that here today. And I also believe that 2445, the intent of 2445 is not to be harmful, specifically or otherwise, for rural communities. However, that doesn't mean that's not an unintended consequence of the way it's written. So there are some problems. I think the other issue that was brought before the committee earlier, and it's a big issue, is the addition of 90 to 100 jobs in the Dalles and Wasco County. I think it's important to note that 100 jobs in Wasco County has the economic equivalent of 3,000 jobs in Old Nose County. That's something to consider. And that's one of the things we always consider in terms of equivalent economic impact in our area. I want to mention one other thing. 5 years ago, we were down here fighting very aggressively to be able to utilize monies that Gill and Sherman of Wheeler Counties had accumulated in 911 excise tax reserve money. And we wanted to take those monies and build a wireless telecommunication system that would encompass Gill and Sherman of Wheeler Counties. Now, they're not the biggest counties in the state, but we're talking about a licensed microwave system that covers 4,000 square miles. And that system is in place today. It's serving the schools and local government. There is a 155 megabit licensed microwave system that, quite frankly, wouldn't exist if 2445 were in effect at that time, or 2443, 2443, or 2680. And the same proponents of 2445, and by that I mean the companies, not necessarily the people, same proponents of 2445 testified mightily against our ability to be able to utilize our own money at that time. Our system's built, it's working, it's a prime example of public-private partnership, because what we did was take public resources and make them available to private sector entities, and we wholesale bandwidth to those entities. Now, if there were a situation where we couldn't interest the private sector investor in providing telecommunication services, then I want government to be able to have the right to do that, or not have that right tonight. So I think what we're looking at here is a situation where you have a choice whether to pass 2445 out of the committee or not. But I would submit to you that if you pass it out of the committee, there's a good chance that you're making state government a part of the problem while you're at the same time preventing local government from being part of the solution.
Thank you, Mr. Testimony. Any questions? I don't see any. Thank you, folks, for your testimony. Rob Bovet, please. And David Berenberg, and let's have Bill Penhollow, please. Morning, Rob. How's things back home?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Sunny and very nice.
We should be on the beach.
And Mr. Chair, I wish I was there.
Is that a move to adjourn?
You just got here.
I'm exhausted.
Should I just get started?
Okay, go ahead, Rob.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, representatives. My name is Rob Bovet. I'm an attorney with Lincoln County. I have some prepared written testimony I provided you. Backside tells you the story of CoastNet. Front side tells you why Lincoln County and all three of our commissioners believe that House Bill 2445 is simply bad public policy. I won't bore you with all that stuff because you've heard it eloquently stated by all of the other folks that have testified here this morning. I do want to touch on kind of just three quick points that have arisen in my mind, at least, from the testimony we've already heard. The first is the Oregon Telecommunications Association. When they speak, I listen. Didn't know who they were a few years ago, but I'm just a small country lawyer, and when you find yourself being opposed by the former
attorney
general,
that worries me. When you say that.
Well, they became involved in litigation with Quest and Verizon, and when you're taken on by big folks like that. That want to shut down your CoastNet project, which is what we have, which is essentially our equivalent of what you heard from the Dalles. You know, I'm not used to finding myself on the opposite side of the Supreme Court or the Court of Appeals with folks like that, but that's where I was. So I do pay attention when they speak these days, and I know who they are now. And I heard what they said. By the way, we won that case, which is a good thing. I got to defend things like home rule. It was a lot of fun. I don't think they thought it was fun, but it was a lot of fun for me. I heard them talk about transparency and sunshine, allowing a local phone company to think about their own plans for the local community. And that's the purpose for this bill. Well, if that's the purpose for this bill, I don't think they need to do that, because I think they get plenty of notice. They just read the papers. They can walk the halls of the city councils and board of commissioners' chambers as well. They can just read the local newspapers. But if that's really all they want, how about a one-line bill that says, you know what? Whenever local government proposes to engage in telecom, please send a courtesy notice to your local telecommunications provider. And by the way, would you think about you know, your plans for the local community, that will be helpful. What I've heard today repeated over and over again, and I could tell you the same story in Lincoln County, is we ask them, we beg them to please reevaluate their local plans for our local community. And in many parts of rural Oregon, that begging has occurred, and sometimes you have to help yourself, as they've done in the Dalles, as we did in Lincoln County. I guess my second point, to address the question that Representative Shoffler posed at the beginning, and I think here's my answer. This bill may not, in fact, have any impact on current provision of local telecommunications by current providers, but and it's not retrospective. And I could agree with that, although I think there's an argument to be made that it's not drafted quite like that. But that's beside the point. I guess my point in answer to that question is why would we want to put up barriers to things like CoastNet and what they're doing in the Dalles? If anything, you should be enacting a statute that further encourages folks to do exactly what they've been doing to help themselves. The third and final thing I'll just mention real quickly, because I know it was mentioned at the very beginning, is, and I did include the citation in my written testimony, I believe this bill does, in fact, represent an unfunded mandate in violation of the Oregon Constitution in a number of respects. And while it might be interesting to be back in court in the Supreme Court or Court of Appeals with the OTA on the other side arguing about this point, I just think that's a waste of everybody's time and energy. This bill is bad public policy. Well, let's encourage the local governments that are doing creative things to help themselves to continue to do exactly that. That's why they're elected, and that's why we do what we do. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. David?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Dave Barenberg, and Legislative Director from the League of Oregon Cities. And on behalf of the 240 city members, and I'm happy to say 240, we're up from 239 now that Damascus has become a city, to a nice rounder number, to express our strong opposition, not to repeat what all the previous speakers have said, but this looks like a solution in search of a problem, that Oregon's local governments aren't looking to get into the business of providing telecommunication services. They're responding to the needs of their community, as is what they should be doing. They're seeing gaps, they're seeing holes, they're seeing the need to drive economic development is now requires 21st century technology. They're rising to meet the needs, and they're doing it in different ways in different parts of the state. They're partnering with different units of government. They're partnering with the private sector. They're getting grants from the federal government if they can, from state government if they can. They're being creative and doing what we want local governments to do, is to find the ways to meet the needs of their communities. I wanted to speak a little bit about the bill, in that the industry has presented it as being relatively innocuous and really not providing an impediment. And I wanted to tell you several of the ways that this bill is an impediment. It looks really innocuous, but just consider a few of the things that are in it. First is, it says in Section 2, before beginning to provide a telecommunications service, a government must prepare a 3-year cost projection and include a cost-benefit analysis and some other things. Well, when you provide these services, they're capital intensive, and the first 3 years are not going to pencil out. They're usually going to be longer term investments. So you have to do, you know, amortize or figure out the cost of your house in the first 3 years, essentially front load it. Then you have to put it on the ballot. Gee, so you're going to have unrealistic costs there. That's going to be on the ballot. Local government can't spend money to support it, and the telecom industry nationally is the largest spending industrial sector in campaign contributions, lobbying, and political expenses. A little bit of an imbalance there. Then you look at a situation like the Dalles, where you have a partnership between a city and county. So do the citizens of the cities of the Dalles vote on the Dalles participating with one cost projection, and on the same ballot have to vote on the county participating with a different cost projection that the county has. Tell me how that is a clear decision and forwards a democratic process. The question, or it was said that this won't impact any existing local government that's providing a service. Well, as I read the bill, it says a local government must receive electoral approval of the method of financing of the provision of telecommunication services or any capital construction. So if they're doing new capital construction, providing a new service, do they have to go to the ballot? That's an interesting question. Some things that have appeared clear to us in language, or we've been told are clear in language in regard to other bills affecting the telecommunications industry, have resulted in years of expensive litigation for local governments with the industry. So we're very cautious about any of those representations. So it really has serious effects on local government's ability to partner and provide these services. And last is the question of what does it say about local governance? I think you've heard from the elected officials that they're close to the public. Each of these cities have referenda. If the public's not happy, they can put it on the ballot. We're subject to open meeting laws, open records laws, annual audits by private auditing firms, public records laws, and public utilities commission requirements for provision of any of these services. So, what's broken here? We have a very transparent process, and we should be in the business of building faith in our elected officials who are volunteering to serve in their communities and make these decisions to meet their needs. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, David. Before I move on, we have Representative Buckley is here to testify. Could I get somebody to step down and stay where you're at, Bill? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thanks for letting me have some time. I came here from the Trade and Economic Development Committee because I see this as an economic development issue, but also an issue of a city's ability to represent the best interests of its citizens. I believe these decisions are best made at the local level. I want to talk to you not as representative at the moment, but as a small business person and as a citizen of Ashland. I'm told that previous testimony referred to Ashland's fiber network as a failure. I'm here to tell you that's absolutely not true. Budget struggles, yes. Financial struggles, yes, we're still working on it. But in terms of what it's done for the Ashland economy, and my own business in particular, when I came to Ashland, I brought with me part of my job as a recruiter for an international theater organization. And my work consisted of contacting performers around the world, setting up auditions around the world, setting up workshops around the world, and eventually performances around the world for our company. Within the first 2 years of using the fiber optic network through Ashland AFN, I doubled my productivity in 2 years. And I'm not the only one of small business people in the city of Ashland who has prospered by this business. So you can look at the budget in terms of what the city council is wrestling with, or you can look at the economic development of our city. I personally know of patent drawing designers who have established businesses in Ashland because of the option of having the fiber optic network. We have software developers in Ashland that are working on programs that will make it easier for small insurance companies to compete with larger insurance companies in terms of processing claims. This system has been a boon to our city. It's been a tremendous advantage to our city, and it could not have happened if the bill you're considering now was in place at the time the city of Ashland was looking forward towards this possibility. One size does not fit all in the state of Oregon, and I would plead with you to consider the fact that Southern Oregon is not the same as Eastern Oregon, and it's not the same as the Portland area. To try to mandate from Salem what our cities should do in terms of the economic development and the well-being of their own citizens, I think is a mistake. So I'm here to oppose this bill, and I respectfully ask you to turn this bill down and allow programs like Ashland, which is a proven success for the people of Ashland. There's no groundswell of support amongst the citizens of Ashland against AFN in any way, shape, or form. I'd ask you to turn down this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions? Thank you for coming in and testifying.
My pleasure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'd like to have Ben Doty and Tom O'Connor come up here and join Bill up here at the front. And you can go ahead with your testimony.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Penhollow, representing the Association of Oregon Counties and the 36 Counties of Oregon. Appreciate the opportunity to appear before you today, and you have my written testimony. I won't go through that because all of the points, as I look through the points I wanted to make today, have been made previously by either a representative or a elected county official or elected city official, but I'd just like to highlight these points for you. I'd like to echo the fact that this is a one-size-fits-all restriction or solution to a problem that doesn't exist. We feel that this bill would violate the principle of local self-governance. This should remain a matter of local determination made by locally elected officials. As Mr. Bobet indicated, this is a mandate. Whether it rises to the level of Measure 30 or not is debatable, but it would be a mandate, the Salem telling local government officials across the state that consideration of telecommunications issues, you need to follow this template. Cities and counties are subject to, as you are, the open meetings law, public records law, local budgets, an annual audit, and as was pointed out earlier, our budget committees have equal members of the community on the budget committee in addition to the elected officials. So these decisions are made appropriately at the local level. This issue should continue to be addressed by city and county officials. They're elected to assume these responsibilities. They are elected by your constituents. They are their constituents as well. And they're at a point, in a geographic point, where they have an opportunity, as you've heard today, to interface with their constituents on a daily basis. And lastly, Mr. Chair, I'd like to say, and members of the committee, that we're at a unique place in Oregon's history with regard to the deployment of telecommunications broadband technology. We need to get it to all of Oregon, to our communities that are unserved presently and those that are underserved. And to do that, it's going to require a public-private partnership. The local governments are going to need to work with the telecommunications industry to see that this happens across the state. I think this kind of legislation would hinder that opportunity, and we would urge you not to pass the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Bill. Ben?
Yes, good morning, Chairman Brown and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ben Doty. I'm the president of NoNet Oregon. We are a telecommunications cooperative owned by electric cooperatives and a tribe around the state. We have non-member participants, and you heard from two of those this morning, QLife and Monmouth Independence, our members. You know, I view legislation that's new always as whose ox is going to be gored here. I think what we hear from the incumbents is really a message that they'd like to maintain a monopoly position. And I'd also take issue with the fact that they say that they don't have any governmental funding. They both, all the incumbents, have access to Universal Service Fund, both from the State of Oregon Universal Service Fund and the Federal Universal Service Fund, which these member communities do not have access to. So there's a real a funding and a purpose. Just a little background, Universal Service Fund is an obligation to serve for plain old telephone service, patch service, but it's used to subsidize the networks and carry on. So there is an issue there that you should understand that's quite not correct. For us, we have been involved with these municipal members for about the last 3.5 years now. We have not, through those members, entered a community. These people have not entered a community without first offering to either operate or participate in the local network in some fashion, and in every case has been turned down. So I think that pretty much summarizes. I wholeheartedly endorse everything that's been said here before by those in opposition to this bill. Our official position is to oppose it. It's bad business and bad government.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Shoffley.
Just for the record, I would like Mr. Doty to clarify when he says incumbent, he's not talking about incumbent elected officials.
No.
We aren't subsidized by anything.
Good point.
Let me clarify that, Mr. Chair. My wife and daughter do subsidize my office because we don't make very much money.
Thank you, Ben.
Tom, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tom O'Connor. I'm director of Oregon Municipal Electric Utilities Association. Excuse me. Thank you. Mr. Chair, I'd just like to address a couple of things specific to this bill and a couple of points about statements of, or a couple of points about Ashland that I've been asked. First of all, I handed out, and as other folks have talked to you about, the existing requirements that all public bodies in Oregon are required to go through, and the industry in their testimony talked about the need for transparency and openness. I would argue that there are a overwhelming number of requirements that we as cities are subject to, as has been talked about all the way through, including initiative and referendum, where any of these actions could be referred directly to the people for a vote if necessary. I'd add one more that hasn't been talked about. Cities who wish to provide competitive telecommunication services, where there's any kind of switched access or dial tone, are required to, just as any other competitive service provider, receive a competitive certificate from the PUC. That process is noticed to all other providers in the state. They all have a chance to come in and protest the application to provide that service. The PUC makes the ultimate decision. They can condition that service. They also have the ability to yank the certificate if they feel that the service is being provided in an improper way. That doesn't apply to cable TV. It doesn't apply to some sort of, as far as competitive telecommunication services. That's a requirement. And the cities that are providing these services have gone through those process and received those certificates. And no one has ever taken that I know of, no one has ever taken a complaint to the PUC about the way we operate. Couple of other just quick points in direct answer or direct response to the question that Representative Shoffler asked. I wanted to make sure I responded to that. It is our reading of this bill that the way it is drafted, it would apply to both existing and future services of this kind. Clearly, it would apply to future services. In the case of existing facilities, the language is vague enough that it's a field day for litigation to decide whether any new capital upgrade or any new service operated over an existing system would be subject to that requirement to go to an election. Lastly, just like to offer or just respond to a couple of things. Municipal electric utilities nationwide are providing telecommunication services, some in terms of broadband over power lines, some in terms of fiber. We have done that in response, and Oregon is no exception, to requests from our community. We're not in this business to make money. We'd be crazy if we were. We're in this business to provide a service to the community upon request. Those requests came from the community members in Ashland. They came from the community members in Cascade Locks. Came from the community members in Monmouth Independence. There's a whole variety of other communities that are providing services of some kind. I guess in terms of one other thing that I wanted to be clear about, municipal utilities that are providing telecommunication services pay franchise fees, pole attachment fees on those services, just like any other provider in the community. If we did not operate in a manner that is competitively neutral, we would run afoul of Section 253 of the Federal Telecommunications Act, which prohibits municipalities, state governments, from providing a barrier to entry. Finally, I guess I just a quick point regarding Ashland. As Representative Buckley spoke about, Ashland didn't get in this service to make money. It has cost more than they thought it would going in. They recently went out for a 20-year bond in the private sector. It's a taxable bond for about $15 million recovered over a 20-year period. I don't know over time whether they will have to put some additional funds into it or not, but that will be determined, again, in an open public process as part of the regular budget process of the community. And the current situation, the Ashland Fiber Network provides cable modem service to over three quarters of the community, cable TV service to about half of the community, and the rates in Ashland, it's kind of an interesting fact, or an interesting piece. The if you wish to get cable service in the county outside the city of Ashland, you will pay $10 more than you would from the same private provider, Charter Cable, than you would if you were inside the city of Ashland. So the private provider currently is charging $10 more for the same service to folks outside the city than they are inside the city. And so over time, over the last 5 or 6 years, the citizens of Ashland have saved about $3.3 million, regardless of which provider they were serving under. So, again, just want to emphasize that our activity in this area is to provide a service to our communities and to meet their needs for the 21st century. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Just one comment, please. I left out one of our member communities that is here. Rob Myers represents the Wheeler, Gilliam, and Grant counties, the Frontier Learning Network, and they are also a participating member of NoNet. So I'll leave that correct on the record.
Thank you. Any questions? Don't say any. Thank you, people.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
We're going to run short of time, so I'll get Jeff Bassinet. Is that Audie Miller?
Andy.
Andy Miller. And Mike MacArthur. I guess we have one more then, huh? Sammy Churchill. Then that'll be all opposed. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Bissonnette. I'm on the staff of the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon. We are represent ratepayers and consumers of utilities working on electricity, natural gas, and telecommunications issues. Excuse me. We are here this morning to testify in opposition to House Bill 2445, as we have as similar legislation has popped up in many of the past sessions. You've heard a lot this morning from a variety of folks, and one of the problems with going toward the end of the line is everything's been said, but you haven't had a chance to say it. So I'll stay pretty short. You've heard from communities all across the state, and so it occurs to me to ask, what is the problem? That was a question that was raised by David Barenberg with League of Cities. To our observation, there has not been any scandal, any disgrace with any of the projects that we're aware of across the state. you know, we could say that maybe it's a conflict between municipal governments and county governments, but that's not the case. You have county governments, local governments working together. You know, we have maybe a public infrastructure versus private enterprise. Well, that's not the case, because you've heard from businesses, you've heard from chambers of commerce that there are projects that are benefiting those businesses, benefiting those customers. And so the only thing missing is, you know, is there a demand from consumers that the telecom companies are being treated unfairly? And I'm here to tell you no, from the consumer perspective. This is an issue of where do these important, vital telecommunication services come from. We have communities that have asked private providers to provide services and have been turned down. We've seen communities ask for partnerships but have been turned down. And so, again, as you've heard all morning, we have different communities responding in different ways to the same need, the need for access to you know, these telecommunication services. The people in Ashland got access to high-speed internet access because of the actions of the community of Ashland long before they came to my neighborhood in North Portland, and that's significant. A lot of people have been making efforts to answer Representative Schaffler's questions of, are people sure that this will not affect, or that this will affect existing service? And the answer that you've heard is a lot of maybe, I don't know. You've heard from QLife, it's like, well, to build out to Google, if this bill were in place, we might have to go to an election. From eWeb, you heard from Representative Barnhart that if they wanted to track their substations via their fiber network, that they might have to go out to a vote. There's a lot of I don't knows here. From the consumer's point of view, what we have is the ability for consumers in different locations to be able to hold their elected officials accountable in their communities to make good decisions. I do note that, you know, probably a majority of you on this committee are former local elected officials serving on city councils, and this is why you and now your colleagues who are currently serving on those city councils were elected in the first place. In some cases, an election may be appropriate. In other cases, it may not. But we are here as consumers to ask you to, you know, not put any additional restrictions. This is has been called an anti-business bill. It has been called an anti-local government bill, and I'm here to call it an anti-consumer bill. To paraphrase a phrase that we often hear around here, House Bill 2445 is a bad bill, should die. We ask you to keep it in committee. Thanks.
Thank you. And we are running a little short of time, so if we're don't replow the same field over again with you would, please, and keep our testimony as brief as possible. We've got a number of people yet who want to testify, and I'd like to get everybody on to get a chance to talk. Go ahead.
Thank
please.
You, Chair Brown, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Andy Miller. I'm the Executive Director of Common Cause Oregon. I'm sure many of you are puzzled why I'm sitting here today. I usually deal with issues of campaign finance. I hadn't even thought of that angle. I appreciated that testimony earlier. My testimony reiterates mostly what's been said before, but I can add a few new things to the plate for you. There's a internet website, freepress.net/community-internet, that would be worth your while to take a look at. There is what is considered anti-muni broadband legislation pending in 8 other states. This is seen as an industry-wide effort to preempt the ability of municipalities from serving their communities well with broadband. I urge you to look at that, and we do not like this bill, and we'd like you to kill it. Thanks.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. And maybe I should apologize for putting you on the spot. Jeff, you ought to weigh in, any folks. If it's If it's not right for us to preempt for telecom service, why is it correct for us to preempt local government when it comes to economic development for land use? Because that's really what we do in this state. And maybe if you don't want to answer that question now, and maybe it's not even fair, but just trying to be consistent and logical in what we do in this state. And I'm just going to retract that as a question. That's just a statement I'm going to make. So we have preempted local government in this state for 30 years when it comes to land use. I think to the detriment of our economy in this state, in my opinion, and local government and their ability to provide services for the people. That's just what I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Escobar.
I just can't believe, but I'm agreeing with him. Very much so. I agree with you 100%, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. Mike, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Mike MacArthur. I'm currently the Association of Oregon Counties Executive Director, and in that capacity, I'd like to speak to Representative Schaffler's comment. We wish you would preempt local government when it comes to land. We spoke in opposition to the North English bill, and we think local government's English decision should be made. Now, I'm here to testify against this bill in my capacity as a former Sherman County judge, not necessarily association director. We had experience with telecommunications there, and I heard the sponsors say a couple of things I think need to be corrected. Wireless broadband communications exists in Sherman County today because of a grant given by the USDA to a private company. Sawtooth Technologies out of Stevenson, Washington, partnered with Sherman County and got a grant that brought wireless broadcast to Sherman County. Otherwise, left Sprint, we'd still be dial-up. I worked in vain for years to get Sprint to extend DSL to the courthouse 2 blocks. It still doesn't exist. To their credit, now they are laying some fiber optic into Sherman County along county roads, for which there's no franchise. There's no charge for laying their fiber optic along county roads. So you heard those. Heard the testimony that there was a cost of that. There is no cost in the county right of way for telecommunications infrastructure.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions for the panel? Thank you, folks, for coming and testifying. Sam Churchill. Thank you, sir, for your patience. A long morning.
Thank you, Chairman Brown and committee members, for the opportunity to speak. My name is Sam Churchill. I'm from Portland, Oregon. I put together a web blog that covers wireless issues, cellular, Wi-Fi, WiMAX, satellite. Started as a hobby, and now I'm living on Google Ads. I've been following municipal wireless, which is a particular interest of mine, and I'm pretty agnostic as to what technology is used. Mostly I come from a consumer viewpoint, and I want, as a consumer, inexpensive, reliable broadband access, and that's why I believe HB 2445 is probably bad for the economics of the state. Just a couple of things I wanted to mention. Number one, in Umatilla, they have a 700 square mile Wi-Fi network to warn people about Umatilla Weapons Depot, and it allows first responders to download maps and send instant messaging and relay images on the highway system to protect citizen safety. I think it's a very worthwhile project. It's a huge project. Also in eastern Washington and eastern Oregon, they have put up large Vivado panels, focused long-distance Wi-Fi beam, mostly for farmers to monitor irrigation. It turns out that while the water on the Columbia River is free, pumping it is not, and it can cost large corporate farmers millions of dollars a year. just in electricity costs, and the ability to monitor those pumps saves them a ton of money. And large wireless networks like these can save a lot of money, and I don't think you're going to find that with commercial providers offering that service. It just, from what I read in the trades, WiMAX, the kind of the Wi-Fi on steroids that has much longer range, 20-30 miles, can deliver similar service to cellular for 1/10 the cost. And so if municipalities that have terminals in their vehicles have to move to a cellular provider to pay to get photo IDs and other information that requires broadband, they're going to pay a lot of money, and why not have a technology that's 1/10 the cost? It just seems like a reasonable plan, and most of those municipal plans, let private industry compete. I mean, it allows, the other competing ISPs to use that infrastructure and compete in the marketplace. That's what we want, isn't it? A vital competition in the state. So I think 2445 is not a good plan. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Any question, Mr. Churchill? Thank you again, sir, for testifying. Could I have Shelley Jensen, Jenny Lang, and Mike Dewey, please?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Lang has a meeting at the PUC, and I'm providing the testimony.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm Shelley Jensen. I'm the Regulatory and Governmental Affairs Manager for Verizon. I wanted to kind of try not to duplicate what other folks said, and first of all, I wanted to talk a little bit about the eWeb issue and what the last gentleman just said about police and fire. I think it's important to note that in the bill, the definition of telecommunications service is providing it to the public for a fee. So if eWeb was only using it to monitor their customers' service, or if police and fire were using WiMAX or Wi-Fi, that wouldn't be being provided to the public for a fee, so it wouldn't come under this bill. So I just kind of want to clarify some of that. I'm going to talk about a couple of communities in our area that are a little bit different situation than what you've heard about today. One of them is McMinnville, which has DSL services from Verizon and has cable modem services from, I believe, Comcast. And but they had an interest in providing telecommunications service because they thought they could do it cheaper and provide it to their customers at less cost than what the private providers were doing. And they received a grant to do a study on whether or not this was a viable option. And after they did the study, they determined that it would cost approximately $20 million to provide the kinds of services that they were looking at. And they really didn't think there was a way to make that money back. And again, some of the community thought that if they just would undercut the private providers' prices substantially so they could get all of those customers on their system, then they could at least possibly cover their costs. Anyway, the bottom line is the city ultimately decided not to go forward. And it just seems to me that that's a good example of how the beginning parts of this bill would work, that if they went through and did a 3-year pro forma and found that it would, and
And there's nothing that, I know David Berenberger talked about 3 years not being long enough because all the costs are up front. There's nothing that says they can't do longer if that's what they think is prudent for their city. It just needs to be at least 3 years so that there's some sense of hopefully by then they will actually have some money coming in because they will have turned on some of the system so that it shows some revenues. But anyway, the point is that after looking at the financial projection, that particular city decided not to go forward with burdening the taxpayers with the $20 million in bonding or however they would have chosen to raise the money. So we also have another city at this point, the city of Bandon, where we provide DSL, and they're also looking at providing a competing system. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that not every city that looks into this is doing it because they don't have the services. They may be looking at it because they see as a city they can use other revenues to subsidize the service and undercut what the existing prices are. So I just wanted to provide that sort of perspective to you, that it's not everybody that's looking at it. It's a city that's without the services today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Mike Dewey, representing the Oregon Cable Telecommunications Association, a trade association of cable companies. As a former president of the Chamber of Commerce, Mr. Chair, I want to thank you for having this hearing. An awful lot of people from out of town have come to Salem, and that's good for the Salem economy, so thank you very much. I did want to make a few remarks about what is said before I get into my remarks that I had intended to make, and I do want to thank you again for your patience. It's been very, very interesting. Ms. Jensen talked about the three-year financial pro forma. We can fix that and make it 10 if that's necessary. I don't think the league's still going to like the bill. We talk about a vote if it is ambiguous as to who votes. I think we can fix that. I still don't think the League of Oregon Cities is going to like the bill. So we can, if the chair would like, we can sit down with these individuals and make it, if you will, more understandable and the word transparent. One of the speakers talked about these big bad monopolies. The world has changed, folks, about telecommunications. SBC is buying AT&T. It's called a merger. In my opinion, AT&T will not exist in the next couple of years. And at one time, it was the largest held stock in the world. And they kind of mismanaged their technical future. And they did in part because they had been a monopoly, and they had to get into the real world of competition. And so when we talk about monopolies, those are going away. My client, the cable industry, had a monopoly, and it was a good monopoly to have for a number of years. But the satellite industry is making us more innovative. It's fortunate that we are providing cable modem service, similar to DSL. It was interesting that one of the speakers talked about Monmouth and Independence. And Mr. Wolf probably didn't tell you, but he has DSL service from Qwest. But it sounded as though it wasn't available, and therefore we had to come into the marketplace. So things are changing significantly. Now, somebody asked if I'm going to talk about Ashland, and I will for a degree. I was heartened to hear that one of the speakers said it was a mistake. I don't know if it was a mistake. They are significant competition. And to have two or three entities is good for the consumer. I will admit that. Because prices and quality are usually better under that set of circumstances. It was kind of interesting. This is an editorial out of the Mail Tribune in Medford. And the city of Ashland was dismayed that Charter would lower their prices. And the only way that Ashland could compete with Charter was to lower their prices, because they wouldn't have any customers otherwise, because they didn't have a track record. And this editorial says, "Welcome to the real world of competition." Now, Ashland is a mistake in terms of their financial performance. And when we testified before the city, we said it was a mistake in terms of what they had come up with. So we think it's very, very important to have in a bill some sort of financial pro forma. I'm going to look forward to seeing the financial pro forma from Independence Amendment, because I would assume they've done something in that area. The newspaper article out of the Ashland newspaper said, well, the problem we had is construction took longer. This is the executive director of the network. Marketing efforts were less successful than anticipated. Competition, our rates were too low, and then they had to offset their losses by going out and borrowing not $1.6 million, but $3.2 million. And recognize that the security is the revenues from the Ashland Fiber Network and the revenues from the city-owned electric utility. So that's a pretty good security, because you've got the monopoly, and if there's any monopoly, it's the electrical monopoly, not the telecommunications monopoly. It's curious, and this is a report that we had done about the network and some of its finances. In the year 2000, the AFN paid $125,000 to the city for administrative costs, which they should do because you don't want cross subsidies. It disappeared in 2001. So those are some of the issues that we get concerned about when a city or a county owns a telecommunications industry, selling at retail. Are there going to be any cross subsidies? Because they have people that can do both jobs, particularly if there's an electric utility in play like Ashland, because they have a marketing department. They have trucks. They have customers, customer lists, things like that. So we do get concerned. Ms. Jensen talked about Bandon. Now, they've applied for a loan from the State Economic Development Department. It's a special public works loan. We oppose the loan. We think the citizens of Bandon need to know what it's going to cost when they, in their application, said they're going to have fiber to the home. Now, that's very, very expensive, fiber to the home. Verizon is saying that's a business they're going to get into. But they've been very cautious in terms of looking at this from the standpoint of, if you will, trial markets, to see if it works financially and technologically, and obviously from a cost standpoint. The loan that Bandon has applied for is 4.6%. We cannot get money in the open market at 4.6% unless it was a significantly short-term loan, and we don't normally get those kinds of loans. So right there is an inherent advantage to the city of Bandon if they were to build a telecommunications system. And arguably, they wouldn't pay property taxes if they own that system. Ashland doesn't pay property taxes. That's another advantage. They talk about QLife. Sounds like a wonderful program. Getting Google is fantastic for the city of Dalles in eastern Oregon. But they talked about an additional loan of $200,000, I'm not sure what the interest rate is, and a grant of $50,000. That is not available to private companies. Now, there was a discussion by one of the individuals talking about a partnership, but the county was able to get the loan, and then I assume transfer that to the private company. So those are the kind of things that ought to happen, as opposed to the city being in the business. The city of Tacoma is in the telecom business. They said they were going to spend $67 million to build out the system. It cost another $24 million. Now, a private investor would say, what happened? And we would hope that a city would do the same thing and get the numbers straight before they built the system. This is basically about a vote. That's the transparency. This is a very competitive business. And why not have a vote? I do understand the rural economic development argument. If somebody is not going to build it, then what are their opportunities? But one of the things you need to know, if somebody is not going to build it, and a county is going to build a telecom infrastructure, arguably it has to be subsidized. So at the very least, you'd want to know what goes away that is being provided today. Is it police and fire service? Because if nobody else is going to build it and you have to subsidize it, at least be upfront and transparent about what's going to go away. And I think at that point in time, the citizens ought to decide if they want police and fire to go away or they want a telecom department. Now, these are big issues. And we need to have, I think, more transparency. I don't think it was very transparent in Ashland when I was down there talking about this. So with that, Mr. Chair, I do really appreciate the opportunity to speak. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions? Don't see a one. Thank you again for testifying.
Thank you.
We had one person that had signed up earlier and was out of the room, and I called his name, Terry Adelson. Give him an opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will be very brief. I submitted written testimony. I'm testifying against 2445 in this iteration. It's come to the legislature at least in the last 8 years that I'm aware of. I work in economic and rural community development, both in the state of Oregon and the state of Washington. I did the Wasco County Telecommunications and Technology Plan, the Harney County Technology and Telecommunications Plan, the Union County Technology and Telecommunications Plan, and have worked in four communities in Washington where they've installed their own telecommunications networks. Because the telecommunications companies would not invest, in a couple of instances, the public-private sectors joined together and invested jointly. I will tell you, within the framework of QLife in the Dalles, which was mentioned just briefly, that Google would not have been in the Dalles or coming to the Dalles had not QLife, in fact, started the public investment processes along with public and private entities in that community. It's just not the city making the investment. And it had to be beforehand before the public or the private sector saw the market. We would not have Oregon Dental Service, which has 150 jobs now in LeGrand and is building a new office building, putting in a dental technician program in cooperation with several of the higher ed institutions in the state, Southern and OIT and Eastern. It would not be there if the public sector hadn't made an investment and didn't need permission from the public other than being elected to represent them and to lead, because there wasn't time to do what the telecommunications companies are asking for. I will tell you now, I'm working on a contract to look at taking over the state backup and archiving services in Burns on behalf of a tribal corporation. In response to an RFI, if the tribe wouldn't have to, but if it came necessary, you can't wait a year to go through processes that they're describing in putting business deals together. And what the telecommunications companies are asking for is simply unreasonable. Again, we've been here, this is the eighth session I've been here and testified against this bill. I've got a Rural Oregon Telecommunications Consortium started a number of years ago, ROTC, a militant group, and it was, in fact, to get broadband services to rural. We've got a mailing list of 3,500 people, and I can bring them all here if we have to. I don't want to. It's, never mind. It's a lot of work. But the bottom line is we believe that local government is responsible, acts responsibly, doesn't do these things out of hand. They recognize the public investment. And because they have invested in telecommunications services, I haven't seen any of the services that Mr. Dooley has gone away, said are placed in jeopardy, go away. I encourage you to just table the bill in committee and appreciate your hearing me.
Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm going to digress. I'm squared away on Warion's bill. Obviously, folks don't want state government preempting people on telecom. Out in your area, we do preempt local government for land use. Would you support some kind of flexibility in our state land use laws to help you folks incent and attract investment out in your area?
I was on the Union County Planning Commission for 8 years. I suffered through that. I was on the Oregon Energy Facility Siting Council for 11 years where we had super siting authority. I think we only exercised the super siting authority on land use in one case in Deschutes County on the height of poles that were allowed in the National Forest. I've not seen in the land use process a parallel to this. You know, I view the land use planning process as protecting me against my neighbor and my neighbor against me. I think there's some unreasonable local considerations that with the play out of Measure 37 are going to make adjustments. But I don't see the parallel between these two.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm just going to make a comment. If local government can handle telecom decisions on their own, and they're qualified to do that, in my opinion, local government is equally qualified to make good, sound, reasonable judgment decision having to do with the people they represent. That's what I think.
I
just a comment. I'm not asking for any response. It's free country.
I agree with you that local government can handle it, and it is handling it within the framework of the decisions and courts.
Thank you, Terry, for your testimony. Any questions? Representative Holy.
I have to ask one question, I guess. In the testimony you provided, there was just one thing throughout this whole thing I've just been thinking about. And, you know, you've worked on several of these economic development issues and trying to go forward with some sort of plans. I'm just kind of curious, because you do mention in your testimony long-range financial projections. Mm-hmm. And do you see, you know, problems down the road, you know, of these sorts of consortiums and plans being able to maintain the assets and maintain the infrastructure and being able to provide the financial backing to cover the cost of doing that?
What most of the projects have been, in fact, the public projects have been providing funding for the infrastructure, where then there are private sector companies operating the operating services over the infrastructure. Not, in fact, providing the services themselves, but if the services can't or won't be provided over the infrastructure, then government has, in cases, stepped in. I know of two rural communities in Washington where that is the case. So it all depends. You know, it all depends on what the price model is. But in every case that I've been involved in, they are ongoing services in place and are operating on a different model than the telcos. They have a shorter amortization period because of using different kinds of technology that are not sunk investments and the like. So there's different price models and the like, but no responsible elected official is going to go out and make judgments about without having good financial planning in place as part of the whole deal, I found to be the case. They don't want to take the risk. They want to stay in office, generally.
Thank you, Terry, for your testimony.
I appreciate your accommodating me.
Thank you. And with that, committee, we are going to be adjourned.